You'd think.
Welcome to Blast FM. We haven't even started.
How many seconds into the show did you think we'd get before the first technical error?
Well, this is Tony Martin and Tony Wilson. Tony Wilson on the buttons today. And I have to say, there was a technical issue even before we began the show, because that wasn't even our intro music. What was that?
But that we blame on the previous show.
Yeah, right. The previous administration.
But well done to the previous show, apart from that tiny hiccup. Mm. One hiccup in 3 hours is nothing. From an otherwise perfect show that is currently being taken off the logger and put in a box as an example of what radio should be. Well done.
And what was the music that we just heard?
Well, we heard...
show is that the theme from?
It's the theme from Spoke, Michelle Bennett's show, which is the show you've just been hearing filled by David Mann.
Yeah, all I'm picturing is Dave Graney at this point at home in the Ponderosa with his head in his hands going, what have they done to my shift? It's broken on the floor. They promised me they wouldn't ding it.
Well, and then so it was a crossover of was gargantuan proportions as I tried to move computer screens, put a track in for next track, try not to make the mistake down the line, and in doing that, kaplunk, as they say.
Yeah, Merry Christmas, everybody.
Merry Christmas. You're listening to The Two Tones. You will be for the next 3 weeks between 12 and 2 in the Elizabeth McCarthy, Dave Graney, Banana Lounge broadcasting slot. We've finally got a niche that we can really wriggle into.
Yeah, that's right.
6 hours, of which we've organised one guest.
Have we? Who's that?
Daniel Kitson, week 3.
Oh, yeah, Kitson's coming in.
Yeah.
Will he be prickly, do you think?
Well, maybe. I asked him to do me a favour about 6 months ago, and he didn't email me back. So maybe.
He's an interesting man. I mean, I get on with him because I haven't said anything to offend him, but I was in on the Conversation Hour.
John Fain.
And I was kind of like when I was a kid and, you know, being the Kofi Annan between your parents fighting, that sort of thing. Kitson wouldn't look at Fain. Fain was just texting with one hand, and I was just in the middle trying to keep things nice.
So do you think Kitson had a bad vibe from Fain?
I'm not sure. He doesn't like radio in general. Well, he likes Triple R. He does a show here when he's in town, but he generally doesn't like really doing anything. Does he even advertise his gigs?
No.
He just has like a mailing list or something, doesn't he?
He has his people. He has his fans, and they are loyal. This time it's about... Is it about a share house? No, it's about his own house, not a share house.
Right.
I think he's prickly enough not to live with others.
Yeah.
And he's had to leave his house. So he's doing a show here as not even... Is it even part of a festival in February?
Probably not. He doesn't like festivals. He doesn't like any kind of organised system of belief or thought.
Yeah, but he loved his old house. So if you want to see that show, get along, buy some tickets to Daniel Kitson.
Yeah. It's not like we've got the information in front of us, though, is it, Tone?
No, I think it begins on the 12th of January, because I tried to get some for my brother for Christmas as a present, and he is away on his honeymoon during that period.
Really?
He told me that at around about the same minute as he told me I was doing the best man speech.
When did this happen?
My brother?
Yeah.
Oh, he's been... It's one of those marriages that's come a fair while after the kids, and that tends to have a big pressure release valve,
yeah,
I think.
Absolutely.
So it's 18. Susie will be 12 months in March, so they've got a 10-month-old kid, Olivia and Ned.
Right.
And I have been bumped up through the ranks of groomsmen to have the prime after-dinner slot.
And what are you working on?
I'm just collecting a few anecdotes from his friends. I heard one that... once he was driving through a swarm of bees, and even though all the windows were down in the car, Ned ducked below the dashboard to drive.
Really?
Yeah.
And still got a mouthful of bees.
And so there's an 8-second anecdote that I've got to somehow spin into a fully formed laugh three times type joke.
Are you going to get a PowerPoint happening? I've heard of people doing that at a wedding now.
Really?
That's extreme.
I've been making for Christmas. I gave someone a video of photos. You know, like what would you call it? A montage. I was in the Kris Kringle. I was given a 93-year-old, let's call her great gran.
Yeah.
And so I thought, what would she like? She might like some photos of her family over the years set to moving music.
That'll frighten her.
The sort of thing where normally people would crank it out after you're gone and you miss the montage. Yeah. And so I tried to do it for Christmas while she was still, well, she is still with us and going well.
But where does that get presented? Is it on a computer?
I converted. Oh, you've tapped into the drama of my night, which was I went to all this trouble of choosing the track. I went with I'm Forever Blowing Bubbles by Vera really? Lynn because I thought We'll Meet Again might be a bit full on.
Yeah, right.
So I went with I'm Forever Blowing Bubbles, which sounds like it's got the right mix of melancholy yet also joyous.
Right.
But there is the lyric, and call up, by the way, if you've had trouble with your own photo montages because of a troublesome lyric. But there is the line, fortune's always hiding, I've looked everywhere. And I think the implication of that is that the person is down on their luck. They can't find fortune.
Sure, sure.
And they haven't had a very happy time of it or a good time of it.
No.
So I didn't want her to take that out of the montage. So I'm just hoping she missed the lyric.
Right.
But the rest of the song worked well.
It's something she'll have to bring up on her laptop?
What
system's she using?
Well,
I said one of these magic frames.
No, you've got to go. You make it on your computer in Windows Movie Maker.
Right.
This is now turning into the show Bite Into It, 7 to 8 on Wednesdays.
We'll have their intro music when we try to play our first song.
And so you get it as I think it's called a Windows Media File or something, right. A WMV perhaps. And that's Trouble. That won't play in your DVD player, and it will flummox great grandma Mrs. Hay. She will not be able to cope with a computer file.
So how's this going to work?
I'm stuck with a montage that's absolutely unusable unless I do. So I Google convert WMV to DVD.
Oh yeah,
and other people have Googled that before. You get your 4 or 5 million hits, and the top ones are all saying free, 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 and so I naturally fall for that. Download. I've got myself a fantastic program to convert from WMV to DVD.
And you're just going to give that to her and let her do the legwork. There you go, Gran.
I start doing the conversion, and it sticks across. This is an unauthenticated copy.
There you go, you see.
So if you want to have the words, this is an unauthenticated copy, going across the most moving images of Great Gran's life, stick with the program as downloaded for free, or if you want to pay just $66 American, you can authenticate your converting program and have yourself a... and then she won't have to have that written across.
So this is for Christmas 2010, this present?
No, they cornered me. They had me with free, and then to get rid of the writing, I paid the $66 bucks,
and Gran worked.
Gran got it as a DVD.
And, and of course, she doesn't know what a DVD is. Has she got this on 78? Dear, oh dear.
So your Christmas, Tony? That was a giving experience I had.
Well, look, we can talk about my Christmas, but let's hear some of it first. Somebody gave me this fine new live album by Tom Waits, Glitter and Doom. Let's hear a bit of that now. I've selected Going Out West. That's Tom Waits. There he is. Bang. Sudden ending. Going Out West from Glitter and Doom Live, which is a new double live album. And the second disc, Tony, it's Tony Wilson and Tony Martin filling in for Dave and Elizabeth here on Triple R, is just Tom Waits talking rubbish for like 40 minutes. They've just got all the talking bits and put them on a second disc.
At the gig.
And it's pretty much a stand-up comedy album. It's pretty funny.
Is it good enough? Would you have wasted the 40 minutes on it?
If for a bonus disc, it's good enough, yes. It's not like, Tom Waits live from the Chuckle Shack standing in front of a brick wall. It's not quite that. He's just full of interesting facts.
There's some gigs you go to where you'd actually like the chat just move to the back. Like, for example, I went to the Flaming Lips gig this year.
Oh, right. A lot of balloons.
A lot of balloons, and I love the Flaming Lips.
Yeah.
And we may have even talked about this earlier, but Wayne Coyne's chat got long, I thought. Too much chat between songs.
Right.
Because I think he backs himself to do good chat. But if someone had told me that you could cut out all his chat
right.
and move that to the last 40 minutes at Festival Hall, and just the diehard lovers of the chat stay around.
And what was his topic? What was he on about?
Normally it's about how good their fans are, and how great their fans are, and how the Lips fans are the sort of fans that won't tear apart a venue. And how he loves them and they love them, and how it's a great symbiotic relationship. And he probably even uses the word symbiotic.
Did he show any of their film, their science fiction film that they've been working on for like 15 years?
It was all backed. All the songs were backed, as is the that's the modern way to have a bit of an audio visual display in the background.
Right.
They've made their own montage.
Of course they have.
Probably used Windows Movie Maker.
Yeah, now what's going on, someone calls during the song?
Julian spotting, he must be a Bite Into It listener who has fallen upon 12 Till 2 Banana Lounge Broadcasting. Well, Julian just says you can do it within Windows Movie Maker. Didn't need to spend the $66.
Yeah, so probably your gran knew that. Was it your gran? Sorry.
It's Tam's great-gran.
Pardon me.
And so, Julian, thank you very much. He did say he's got Windows Vista. I've only got Windows XP.
Yes, that's your problem, Tony. You've got the downloaded the wrong application. Are you still operating off System 10?
That's exactly right. So it may be that I can't do it, but Julian can.
Right.
In which case, well, that's just bad luck. Now, you have spent the last 3 days in a cave, is that right?
I have.
Or should I say a cavern?
Everyone I know has left, gone into state. I've been at home on my own watching the entire, and this will disgust Dave Graney if he's listening at home, the entire Beatles anthology. Someone gave me that on DVD. It's like 12 hours worth.
Yeah.
Non-stop Beatles. And what you notice first, really, is that it's very hard to find a picture of the Beatles taken in the 1960s where they're wearing bad clothes. Yeah. Like, even when they had no money, they still had great suits.
Yeah.
And, you know, right through that Carnaby Street era.
Flower stuff.
Always interesting, always good clothes.
Yeah.
Pretty much nothing that would embarrass you. Cut to the present day interviews done about 1995. Has anyone ever lost their fashion sense so comprehensively than the surviving members of the Beatles? Ringo Starr, he just should burn his entire house down. How many bad, colourful shirts? He's obviously got, I'll be needing this for posterity. This multi-panelled Dimmies monstrosity will be perfect to preserve my words for the ages in. And then, you've seen this, Paul McCartney. How many dopey locations can he be interviewed in?
He looks, and he has a dopey face as he gets into his 50s. He does that sort of mouth half open look that he's got. And he's, but I brought this up with you, and I think you've given me blankies back until you've seen it yourself. But the tugboat,
what is going on there? Round about halfway through, because they've obviously done a series of interviews in different locations over some years. So every time you cut to them present day, they're in a different location having a barbecue. And then, for no reason, Paul McCartney is driving a tugboat.
Yeah.
Driving a tugboat, just talking about, when George Martin decided to... And you just go, why are you driving a tugboat? And then if you look closely, there's obviously someone else who's actually driving it, who's trying to stay out of shot, and just saying, stand there and move your hands like you're staring at it. It's ridiculous. He's talking about, you know, that when we met Elvis... It was amazing when we met Elvis. And then but he's driving a tugboat through a... through a viaduct or something. What's that word? A canal. Ridiculous.
When we met Elvis, he had so many yes people that they just let him do ridiculously stupid things. As opposed to us, where I was being guided very wisely towards this tugboat.
Now, this is going to be obviously a documentary for all time. We're going to preserve everything definitively. Where would you like to be? I think I'd like to be driving a tugboat. I think that'd look great. I think that'd look really rock and roll if I was just driving a tugboat, assisted by the bloke who actually drives it. And then you go, well, that was ludicrous. And then when they come back to him the next time, he's having a campfire. He's in the middle of the Blair Witch Project, poking away at some embers with a stick. What's going on there? And then Ringo Starr, what's great is whenever they're talking about anything, it'll be like, then we decided to set up Apple. And so Paul McCartney go, well, I was doing most of the organising on that, and George Harrison, I was producing a couple of albums, and John had some folk artists that he discovered, and he was producing them, and then they just cut to Ringo Starr. Well, I didn't have much to do with that. I was on holiday. Yeah. He didn't seem to be involved in anything.
Yeah. Do you remember the line, the movement you need is on your shoulder? Is
that it? That's from Hey Jude.
From Hey Jude.
Yeah.
And Paul tells a story of when he first plays that to John. He says, the movement you need is on your shoulder. I'll change that. I know that doesn't really work. I'll change that. And then John says, no, that's great. That's the best bit.
That's right.
And so he keeps it. And it isn't the best bit. It doesn't make any sense.
No, it was just taking the piss. And there's still lingering residual tension between Paul McCartney and John Lennon, isn't there? He'll say something like, you know, we're all going to go up an helicopter. And, of course, John got on the helicopter. He was on first. I didn't get to fly on the helicopter. You're going, leave it. You've probably got a fleet of helicopters now. Stop talking about it. Well, now, when I said to you that I was going to talk about the Beatles on Triple R, you said, hey, let's play a track. And I'm thinking, Triple R, you don't play the Beatles on Triple R, do you?
Well, not if you want to stay in Dave Graney's good books, but he's not here. And you can certainly, you can play whatever you like on Triple R. We're playing the Beatles.
Well, okay, I thought, well, I'll choose something I've never heard on the radio before, something from the White Album. This is the kind of song I guess you write when you become so rich and so disconnected from the real world that you go, you know what, I'm going to write a song about the desserts at the Savoy. This is Savoy Truffle.
They said no to war.
They did.
And then they continued on. That was La Tiga from an album, I think probably a 2006 album, This Island. Mm. And that song, New Kicks, was part of their anti-George W. Bush campaign. And one of the voices that they've excerpted from the peace rally in there is Susan Sarandon. That's why this song is newsworthy this week, because here's the new weekly part of the show. Susan Sarandon has split with
Tim Robbins. For a ping pong entrepreneur.
That's what it says.
Apparently.
On Defamer,
who are claiming that Susan Sarandon is 51, which is quite...
You don't think she's 51?
Well, she's quite clearly 63.
Well, she played about a 40-year-old seductress of the baseball team in Bull Durham in 1986.
Yeah, it was a while. Might have been 88.
88?
People will call.
Well, they will, especially if they've done as many lines into the IMDb as you have. But Susan Sarandon, ping pong entrepreneur. Apparently, they met in 2007 at what are called naked ping pong parties.
What's that about?
Where no one gets naked. It goes on to say in the next line, slight overpromise in the previous line.
Right, is there ping pong?
There is ping pong, I believe. Do you know, I was part of a ping pong collective for a while.
Really?
Yeah.
Collective?
Well, we used to meet once a month at Down Street. There was an apartment that a friend of mine, Gus McMillan, from the Bluegrassy Knoll.
Right.
He and his musician mates had a sort of a beautiful loft, warehouse sort of thing, and organised black light ping pong, which is a game I can recommend to anyone.
So this is under, like, the bank that you can see your signature.
Yeah, that stuff.
The bank signature thing.
UV lights. Right. The purple. You turn off all the lights and you put window covers on, and then you invest in a couple of black lights. You paint your bats white.
Right.
You've got your white ball. You've got the lines on the...
This sounds almost good.
It's not just good. It is great. I think it's probably they were the best times of my life.
So how long did this go on for?
About a year.
And how good were you?
I won once with Tam.
Really?
So we were in a mixed doubles situation, and there was a tournament, so it was a knockout, and we rose to the very lofty heights.
And can you get are you also getting a tan? Is it like a tanning salon with that much black light?
Is that what they use? I don't think maybe it is what they use.
I'm not sure. I've got
very sensitive skin. That would explain maybe the psoriasis today. Too much black light ping pong.
There must be a downside. There's probably a community service warning somewhere. You say, musician friends, you know, like you're not one of them.
Oh.
But Phil just came in here and fossicked under the desk looking for something during that last song.
Yeah.
And reminded us that you are a musician, Tony Wilson, as people who have been to YouTube and typed in, what do you have to type in?
Sam_song4.
This is from Sam Pang's final breakfast a couple of weeks back at the Corner Hotel. Quite an extraordinary performance from you, and well captured on the YouTube, I have to say.
Yeah, it was well filmed, and they've done that thing of lifting the audio from the logger. So it has the sound of it going to air. And they've overlaid that over the footage. So it actually is, it's as good a quality as you could expect from a once every 2 years rock and roll star like myself.
And I remember you calling me up the day before that and you were very nervous and you're going, do you think I can get away with rhyming Pangless with Michael Changless?
Well, the line was, the breakfasters are pangless,
right,
as tennis is Michael Changless.
Right.
To suicide is painless was the adapted song. And I was a bit worried that as tennis is Michael Changless was a little bit, wasn't particularly to do with Sam's life.
No.
But you pointed out to me that he has a penchant for identifying old-fashioned rackets with old-fashioned players. That's a bit tennis-y.
Yeah.
That he's been a tennis coach in a previous life. A bit tennis-y.
Yeah.
And
it rhymes.
And he's Eurasian, and Michael Chang is Asian. People will naturally do a link where perhaps there was none, and I'd get away with it.
Yeah, well, it worked. It worked a treat.
Yeah, well, I could even probably play a little bit of it later on.
Oh, okay.
It's somewhere on my iPod, I think, if I can dig around.
There's a dangled carrot. I went in on the breakfasters to farewell Sam Pang, and he does what people occasionally like to do with me, and he gave me an old LP by Tony Martin, the singer whose career I think really peaked in about 1938, but who is somehow still alive. I think he's about 150 years old. He was married to the late Sid Charisse.
So is he, would you call him, what era is he?
Crooner.
Who's he singing with? He's singing with Bing?
Yeah, around there. He was in the Marx Brothers movie, The Big Store, doing the Zeppo role. And he had his own TV show, The Tony Martin Show, in the 1950s. I don't think he's done anything for about 60 years.
Other than clog up your Google hits.
That's right. And he's got a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame, so once a year I'll get a snapshot from somebody of that. But Sam gave me this fantastic 10-inch long player. It doesn't really have a name. It's just called Tony Martin. And it reminded me of what albums used to be like in the old days, where they'd have just some biographical information about the artist on the back. Wasn't that the day?
Yeah.
You never read this on the back of a Radiohead album, for example. This is what they say about Tony Martin. Mercury Records takes pleasure in presenting this recording by one of America's most talented musical luminaries, Tony Martin. Martin has shown a unique talent for musical versatility. He has played saxophone and clarinet, conducted his own orchestra, launched a successful singing career, and enjoyed a movie career which equals that of a good many top screen favourites. Everything about Tony Martin bespeaks romance. He is a fastidious dresser and has one of the largest collections of clothes of any male star in the movie industry. He takes care of his well-being physically by playing handball 3 days a week and working out daily in a gymnasium. His movie roles always cast him in the character so familiar to him now, that of a romantic singing lead. To top it off, songs for which Martin is famous are mostly love songs with a story which is so designed to bring young couples together. No better person could be chosen to do this recording, which is designed for romance. Tony Martin has that undeniable thing show business calls talent. No matter where Martin has appeared, people gather and talk about him. People have been intrigued by him and have remained that way under the spell of his personality. Here, then, is Tony Martin, truly an extraordinary singer of songs and master of showmanship. Now, why don't you read that kind of stuff on the back of an album?
I wish I had have read that at the start of the show to say that you were going to be on today.
That's fantastic. But I bumped into Justin Hazelwood, our own Triple R's own from Lime Champions, currently in Recess. And he's got a new album coming out this year, the soundtrack, if you like, of his show at the Comedy Festival last year, Songs from the Number 86 Tram. Fantastic show. It's going to be an excellent album. I was trying to convince him to do a bit of that on the back of his album.
Justin Hazelwood. The Bedroom Philosopher was born in 1978, about, do you think?
And has one of the largest collections of clothes of any male star working at Triple R. and plays handball three times a week, something like that.
I like the fact that he works out. I'm currently editing a novel, so I've got a... and the editor gets rid of all my superfluous words.
Oh, right, yes.
And so you have to take some hits about the redundancies towards the end of your paragraphs.
You have to lose a few absolutelys.
And I would have thought that works out... in the gymnasium were three words that my editor would have targeted.
Just imagine somebody in the record shop deciding whether they're going to buy this album on the basis of that.
Plays right. Little handball.
How many times does he play handball, though? Before I buy this record...
Three times a week.
Yeah, that could be a good album. In a gymnasium, yep, that's going to sound great. But speaking of the Bedroom Philosopher, do you want to hear the first single off his album? Yes, let's hear it now. This is The Bedroom Philosopher with Tram Inspector. Thank you, The Bedroom Philosopher, Tram Inspector. That's the first single off the album Songs from the 86 Tram, which is coming out sometime in the new year, which is quite soon, I think, isn't it, Tony?
Thursday. Right. Is the New Year's Eve, I believe. It's always a week after Christmas, so if Christmas is on a Thursday, so is New Year. And the only problem about my information... Christmas was on a Friday.
Oh, was it? I've lost all track of time.
So maybe New Year's Eve might be Thursday night.
Okay, I know, it's Thursday night because that's when that Sean McAuliffe special is on.
And you're in that?
I'm briefly in that called...
But you weren't briefly in the filming of it, were you?
It was a long night. There's no reflection on the quality of the program. It was quite complicated. Is this rude to talk about? I'm not slagging off the people who made the show. It was a complicated show, and the taping went for 6 hours.
Ooh.
And I was sitting on the couch, and I came on early and did a few cheap jokes, and then had to sit on the couch for the rest of the show. So it was 6 hours.
Wow.
So it was like being in a disaster movie. It was like the Poseidon Adventure. And Michael Pope, the warm-up man.
Oh, how was he at the end?
I've never seen anyone more at the end of their leash.
What's brown and sticky, a stick sort of stuff? Was he throwing that out?
I couldn't have done it. He was trying to think of stuff to say. At like the 5 3/4 hour mark, he's just exhausted, and he's just got his iPod out, and he's going, right, and there's only about 70 people in the audience, and they want to go. And he's going, what's this the theme to? And then someone's going, Huckleberry Hound, okay. What's this the theme? Someone got it wrong. And he goes, no, that's wrong. You're not getting a lolly. This guy just goes, I didn't want an effing lolly. Not effing. He didn't say effing. But it was a long night. But it was complicated. And Roger Explosion, if you're a fan of that old business that Sean used to do, he's back. And, it's pretty mad. It's pretty more like the McAuliffe program from the ABC than the audience were largely made up of people who know Sean from
talking about
your generation.
Yeah.
And they were baffled by a large amount of it.
It's set in, sort of at a set being his house, is
it's
that right?
Sort of like it's, it's sort of done up like a Don's party house, and Sean's wearing a cardigan and pipe. People were confused in the audience. It'll look great at home, but there was a lot of people who were just, well, where's Josh Thomas?
Well, that's New Year's Eve.
Yeah,
if you don't want to watch Human Nature live at the Opera House,
of course,
turn over to Sean McAuliffe.
Yeah,
And his New Year's Eve spectacular. But we've also this New Year's Eve. It's a blue moon. Have you heard that?
Now, what is a blue moon? It's not just something from a song. That's something real.
You hear once in a blue moon as an expression. Well, it's blue moons are about twices, because it's when a moon turns up twice in a month, a full moon.
Oh, right.
Twice in a month.
So it's just a full moon. That's all it is, but it's the second one in a month.
So the first full moon this month, I think, was on the 3rd of December or something like that.
Right.
And now there's another full moon coming on New Year's Eve, which is quite romantic when you think about it.
Yeah.
And so it's a blue moon. And apparently the last blue moon that... Either the last blue moon we've had was in 1990, but I think it's more likely the last blue moon into a new year was 1990.
Right, so are you having a blue moon party at your house? What are you doing?
No, not at all. But you know how people say that full moons cause odd behaviour?
Yes, they do.
I wonder if that'll be one of the stories on Friday morning.
I'm sure it will be.
It was really odd behaviour last night. A lot of people were dropping their pants and brown-eyeing the police.
I'd like to think that Mal Walden will have one. Well, you've heard the phrase, once in a blue moon, one of those.
It could be.
And then the footage won't come on, and he'll get angry. That's my favourite thing on TV, is when there's a problem on the Channel 10 news and Mal Walton starts kicking some ass on air.
That's a guy who's been in a job a long time, isn't it?
He's the best, I reckon.
Our fact about, our default fact on Mal Walton is that Phoebe Squared's mum, Heather.
Yes, Heather Squared.
Heather Squared went on a date with Mal Walton.
Oh, really? Did she come back well-informed?
I don't know. But early days, Mal, I believe he would have had a more flaming mop of red hair back then, not right. dulled by age.
No. Now, hang on. I'm trying to think what the link is here. You want to talk politics, don't you?
I do, yes. Only because yesterday's front page made me laugh, because political advertising, it's almost a responsibility as an opposition to complain about how much the government spends on promoting themselves once they have the Treasury's purse strings.
And Kevin Rudd's he likes spending a bit of money on marketing.
Well, this time we're talking state government, so it's Brumby.
Okay, right, Brumby.
He basically got accused yesterday by the Liberal opposition, Baillieu, of really funding...
Is he still hanging in, Baillieu?
He is.
The Toff from Toorak?
Absolutely.
Is he hanging in there? Well done.
He accused them of spending $10 million on political ads in the last year, and that there's a whole new raft of them coming. He said every time you'll turn on your television, it'll be another ad from Brumby telling you how good he is. He said, well, I mean, in fairness to Brumby, some of them are bushfire awareness.
Oh, yeah.
So I sort of think that governments sort of have to tell
people.
So spend that by all means. Uh-huh. I think he's also spent on how Victoria is moving on after the GFC, you know, how they've... The big infrastructure projects are saving the state. There are those ads.
Yeah.
But the opposition did seem to have a point on the $1 million that's being spent to spruik a cancer hospital that is yet to be built.
Oh, so really?
The cancer hospital's coming, I think, in the next few years.
So what does the ad say?
It's saying, looking after Victoria's health, we're building this fantastic cancer hospital.
Right.
And as the opposition have said, that amount should really have been spent on cancer sufferers rather than promoting a hospital that is yet to be built.
Yeah.
But Health Minister Daniel Andrews, he hit back and said the campaign was designed to save lives.
How?
By reducing the fear and stigma surrounding cancer. Have you heard, in all the crackpot cancer cures that are out there on the internet, have you ever heard someone getting over cancer because the fear and stigma was reduced?
We've got your results, Mr. Martin. The fear and stigma's down.
The good thing is, now, you've got some bad results here, so what I'd recommend is getting home and trying to reduce the fear and stigma to do with your disease.
Gee, well... Okay, well, good luck to them. How much is Rudd spending? I think Rudd should just be he should just be running ads that just say, Kevin Rudd, controlling the news cycle. Because that's what he's best at. That, to me, is his biggest skill, is making you forget about what he was talking about last week by bringing up a new thing.
Yeah.
That's what he's really good at. But you're really, you've chosen a song, I believe, to do with marketing.
I have. We actually played this last time we filled in on this show. So you could say that we're trying to develop it as a single.
As a hit.
Yeah, or you could say that we're lazy with our record collections. Either way, this is from DC Root, Everybody Love You, Long Time.
That's the Bon Scots, The Kids Are Coming. More Melbourne music right here on the Two Tones, filling in for Dave Graney and Elizabeth MacArthur on Triple R throughout summer. And before that, more Melbourne music, Root with Everybody Loves You, Long Time. And then we've had a few calls about the Bedroom Philosopher single, Tram Inspector. That's not out. Or the album isn't out. As I understand it, he doesn't yet have an album deal, but this single is doing the rounds of radio stations. I'm not sure that you can buy it in the shops. Sorry about that.
Never mind.
What were we going to talk about,
I was going to talk to you about A2 on the weekend.
Right.
There was an interview with everyone's favourite shaggy New Zealander, Peter Jackson.
Oh, yes.
He's still doing good dishevelled, by the way. It's not like as the dollars have rolled in, he's decided to change his image and go cleaner. He looked great in his photo.
He's got a new shirt, I understand.
Good shagginess. He was talking about his latest film, which is The Lovely Bones, or is it just Lovely Bones?
No, they might have dropped the. That's fashionable now.
Yeah. Well, he was talking about making that film, and in particular, the decision not to show the death of the voiceover narrator. I think the film is told from the point of view, and the book is told from the point of view of a girl who has been murdered. So it's kind of quite a grisly...
Have you read this? No.
No. Have you read it?
No.
All I know is that Alice Sebold, who wrote it, is married to Glenn David Gold, who wrote Carter Beats the Devil.
That's a good book.
So I would rate them as perhaps the greatest husband and wife novelist team in the world at the moment.
More so than who do they usually go for? Paul Auster and Siri Hustvedt? Or who's that bloke? Jonathan Safran?
Dave Eggers?
Dave
Eggers is married to a novelist, Vida, Vendela Vida.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I think they're the number one husband and wife team, just because I love Glenn David Gold so much, although I haven't even read his second novel because people are balking.
Yeah, they're on the balk.
This Charlie Chaplin sort of themed thing.
Sunnyside.
That he's done next. Apparently it has none of the grip of Carter Beats the Devil.
Right, and which is a book about a magician.
Who gets rid of, or may have got rid of...
A president.
Something to do with a president.
Mm.
Where were we on this?
It was about the Lovely Bones. The Lovely Bones. Now, when you say Peter Jackson is saying, you know, sorry, I'm not killing someone off on screen, he does seem very defensive, doesn't he? I think the film is getting, let's just say, mixed reviews.
Oh.
And that is because, I haven't read the book, but people who've read the book always say to me, look, it's a good book, but it's always dodgy depicting heaven. Even in a book.
Well, in the Michael Landon show, what was it called? Almost an Angel? Highway to Heaven.
Highway to Heaven, yeah.
They balked at that. They just had him walking off towards bright lights.
Yeah, it's very difficult because it always... I'm trying to think what it looks like. What was that Steven Spielberg film where Audrey Hepburn was in heaven and it was just a big field of grass or corn or something? Always.
I didn't see that one.
Right.
But it's heaven is depicted in that Robin Williams film, What Dreams May Come.
Oh,
do you remember that?
Yeah, that was made by a New Zealander as well, by Vincent Ward.
Really?
Yeah.
Did you see it?
No. I heard it was dodgy. I heard Robin Williams was in it. That's probably the reason I didn't see it.
It's not great. Apparently, let's get the gang back together by killing off all the members of the family so they can all be up there together.
Oh, okay.
That sort of feel to What Dreams May Come. We are interested in depictions of heaven that have appeared in film and television.
We're going to have people to phone in with their favourite heaven movie.
9388 1027.
Okay.
But... because that's quite a difficult phone in, and it's at that time of year where some people don't call radio stations very much or even listen to the radio.
No.
Filming the unfilmable is another thing we're interested in. So if it's not heaven that's very difficult to film, what is it?
Yeah.
And who did it? Either particular well or particularly badly.
I'm trying to think of my favourite heaven. Chris Rock was in heaven, wasn't he? Something, Down to Earth. Well, that was a remake of Heaven Can Wait. I like the Albert Brooks film, Defending Your Life, which depicts heaven as an enormous bureaucracy where you have your own attorney who represents you and you have to go along to hearings and prove that you did, you know, worthwhile things during your life.
I saw a short film actually at MIFF this year that was a BBC comedy sketch. Really high production values, and it was similar to that. It was depicting heaven, depicting purgatory. What's the spot where they decide whether you go in or not?
Limbo, I'm not sure.
It was depicted as a government department.
Right.
Like, it seems as though they're deciding whether or not you'll go into hell, but in fact, the reveal, and you're going to be doing well to see this film maybe on YouTube, is that you are in hell as you try to shuffle between the different departments, and the bad behaviour of this couple means they are destined to try to get into heaven for the rest of their days. And that's hell.
Okay, these are quite good depictions. Are we looking for heaven and hell?
I think let's broaden it out. Heaven and hell. We have a caller. It's quite possible it's someone wanting to know if the office is open, but let's give them a go. Hello.
Straight to air.
You're on the two tones.
No, the office is open.
the office isn't open.
anyway.
Who are you, sir?
Oh, dude, that's a good question. Paul.
Paul.
Yes. before I continue, Tony Martin.
Yes.
Look, I've been listening to you. I don't want to sound like a suck-up, but I probably am. But I've been listening to you ever since, oh, geez, I was 13, 14. You know, you're probably the reason why I got hooked on the radio.
Right.
Listening to you on Martin Malloy, and I've got all your CD. I've got all the CDs of it, so... Mate, thank you very much.
No worries. Somebody played me a track off one of our CDs recently and asked me to explain something on it, and I couldn't explain. It was one of our albums has an ad for a fragrance called Crichton Brown. And it was something to do with somebody called Noel Crichton Brown. And I have to say, I have no idea who he was or what he did.
I can help you with him. He was a...
Paul's gone.
He's lost him.
He's a big fan. But he doesn't like Noel Crichton Brown.
And I don't think he had a... He just wanted to tell you how important you've been.
He's already turned on me.
But I think once he got it off his chest, how much he liked you. He didn't have a heaven in him. And so he figured that's where we may have gone next.
Right. Sorry, who was Noel Crichton Brown?
Noel Crichton Brown, wasn't he a sort of like a political heavyweight who got done in one of those corruption probes?
Probably.
Ooh.
I hope you're right, because
that is highly defamatory. Crichton Brown was in the shit at some point.
In the Crichton Brown.
With a political scandal.
Up to his elbows in Crichton Brown.
We may be done here, but I don't think he was... Put it this way, I don't remember him being much loved.
Right. Well, thanks for calling, Paul. Sorry if we've offended you somehow.
I don't think you have. We've got another caller, though, Tony. Hang on a sec. Hello, are you there?
Yeah, it's me. Yeah, the reception night.
Oh, it's Paul again. Did you drive under a tunnel?
Yeah, I drove into a tunnel.
Well, it was coming through loud and clear when you couldn't hear us, but but now we can hardly hear you.
Oh, God. Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can. You're slightly Dalek-like, but we'll forward you on. Have you got a heaven depiction you'd like to mention?
Well, it's more of a hell depiction, and I'll probably feel shit about it, but...
Yeah. Now we've lost you completely.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, we can hear like every third syllable.
But it sounds as though you're about to go across the sticks yourself, to be honest.
But have a crack.
Okay, one more time. Can you hear me?
Yeah, give it a go.
Little Nicky.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Adam Sandler.
Any Adam Sandler movie would be hard to film.
And was Rodney Dangerfield in that?
No.
Was he the devil? Who was the devil in that?
Oh, jeez.
I'm sure it was Dangerfield. I know Quentin Tarantino's making one of his ill-advised acting forays in it.
I just had the name on the tip of my tongue, but I just can't...
Well, Paul, thanks for throwing in Little Nicky. We're losing you a little, so we might get Tony... He would be describing a hell depiction in that film?
Yeah, that was sort of where the wheels came off. For Adam Sandler after about 7 hits in a row.
Right.
People didn't want to go to hell. I'm sure it was Dangerfield.
I've got another caller, Tone.
Who is it? Hello.
Hello.
Who's this?
It's Graham.
Graham, how can you help us?
How about Beetlejuice or Beetlegeese?
Oh, yeah, remember Beetlejuice. That? Yeah, that was... What? It was a big Tim Burton fun park, wasn't it?
It was the guy who was Mr. Mum.
Yeah, Michael Keaton. But there was a very good... I haven't seen that since it came out, but there was a very good scene in a waiting room, wasn't there?
Yeah, and it was like the guy who'd been killed by the pygmies.
Yeah, that's right.
His head had been shrunk, and the woman who was smoking, and the smoke was coming out of a chest cavity or stuff, and just all these really weird creations of Tim Burton sitting in a waiting... And it was very public service-like. It was like you were saying before.
Yeah.
Kind of a public service-run purgatory or... What was the other one you said?
There was...
Utopia? Maybe it was Utopia.
Yes. I'm trying to think what was...
You said it about 10 minutes ago.
I said it about 10 minutes ago. Very confused. We're on holiday.
Yes.
At the moment. Yeah, look, that's right. Beetlejuice. And have you seen the shorts for the new Tim Burton film with Johnny Depp called... Alice in Wonderland.
Yeah, that just looks... I just love Johnny Depp and Tim Burton.
But do you get the feeling... I was watching going, this is amazing, but... Didn't this come out like 5 years ago? Haven't they already done this one?
Just whenever they get together, they just go down the same path of really weird, existential, trippy stuff, which is just a joy to watch, really.
And what else? What other films are you looking forward to?
I missed 2012. I was looking forward to 2012.
2012. Do you think that was going to be good, though?
Oh, John Cusack, you know. See how he somehow got Joan in there, because, you know, you can't be John without Joan.
Do you think she'll be in the hot tub time machine?
She could well be. That's a good thought.
There's a clip on YouTube where they've taken, you know, the scene that they show in all the shorts from 2012 where... Cusack's driving a car and the land is falling. And then he's, at one point he's flying a plane just as the
land falls
away. And then he flies between some buildings that are collapsing. Somebody's got that scene and they've changed the music to the chase music from Raising Arizona. You know, where he's running with the Huggies through the supermarket.
Yeah.
And at first you laugh. And then after about a minute of it, you go, this is fantastic. This is probably better than what they've used in the film. It's quite good.
Do you reckon...
I just had a weird flash while you were saying that.
Yes.
Did Father Ted have a heaven scene where Father Jack...
Oh, God. Well, because Father Jack died and then he came back to life, is that right?
And in that episode, did he ever... Was he in heaven for a while?
He possibly was.
And I think it was all girls and whiskey.
Drink!
Yes.
Guys!
All right, guys, I'll let you get on to that.
Okay, sorry. It's good when you're being wound up by the caller, I always find.
We've got one more caller.
One more caller. Who is that?
Hello.
It's Lee calling.
Hey, there you go, Lee.
Yeah, good yourself.
Good. What have you got for us?
Oh, listen, the only thing that springs to mind that you're talking about depictions of heaven was George Burns comes to mind in...
Oh, God,
yeah.
Now, see, I've never seen any of those, but it was George Burns as God and then possibly as the devil as well in, like, the third one, Oh, God, You Devil.
Yeah.
But wasn't John Denver the hero of those films?
Yeah, he's the... Yeah, that's right. He was the main character, yeah.
I wonder if when John Denver died and got to heaven, it was anything like that film. Wouldn't you have been surprised if George Burns was waiting for him, going, this will be a stir when John Denver gets here?
I'm going to do the same lines as in the film, but I'm going to tweak them slightly.
And how was heaven depicted in those films?
For some reason, I tend to remember it being like a white office room.
All-white rings a bell as the most common depiction, where the set of ADBC, effectively.
Yes, and don't mention death in connection with that program. Okay, that's a good collection of heaven and hell. If people want to call and contribute, the number is...
9388-1027. We actually have two more. Shall we keep marching?
Let's do it. It's summer.
Because otherwise we've got to keep them on hold through
the
song.
Let's do it.
Hello.
Hello, Tone.
Hello. Who's this?
Hey. Now, Greg, this end. Oh, I'm going to call myself Greg.
Good on you.
Yes. I'm remembering a porn movie.
Oh, yeah.
By the name of Heavenly Something. It might have been Heavenly Desire. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Where I think Jamie Gillis, who always looked extremely bored, was sitting in the aforementioned heaven, which was just a big flat floor with a bit of... smoke going across it.
Right.
And in a chair and being visited by a series of young women that had their evil way with him.
Right. And is this an afterlife that appeals to you?
Oh, no.
That's the Osama bin Laden pitch, isn't it?
No. I don't think I could be bothered, Tone.
Okay, fair enough. I'm dead.
That is all I'm after.
I love the fact. Thank you, Greg, for ringing in with a porn film. Hello, have you got a heaven or hell for us?
Oh, we're in it.
Ooh. Hello?
Hello.
Who's this?
G'day, it's Daniel. How are you?
Hello, Daniel. What have you got for us?
I reckon it's a beauty, and Tony Wilson might appreciate it as a pop culture aficionado. Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey depicts both heaven and hell.
Oh, yeah.
Does it?
Yeah, it's a long time since I saw The Bogus Journey. How are they contrasted?
It's that movie.
Who was running hell?
I thought it was a large devil figure, and then they just got taken to their personal hell. And in the case of Ted, it's a boot camp style military academy. And
right.
So they're forced to do infinity push-ups, and the line of the movie, I reckon, is, "Dude, there's no way I can do infinity push-ups." You think you'll let them do it girly style?
Do you reckon Bill and Ted were modelled heavily? Who do you reckon's the pioneer stoner figure for the Keanu Reeves.
Oh, surely
character.
It's Jeff Spicoli, Sean Penn in Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
I saw that last week.
That's year dot, isn't it, for stoners?
Yeah, I believe so.
Look, I don't go back further than Paulie Shaw, I don't reckon.
No, and Encino Man.
I think after Fast Times at Ridgemont High. I saw it last week. That stands up as a film.
Yeah, it's people just remember certain bits, and I think people know which bits I'm talking about, but it's quite serious, isn't it, in parts, isn't there?
Yeah, there's a teenage pregnancy.
There is, isn't there?
And an abortion.
Yeah, sure.
Tam was watching it going, she'll keep the kid, she'll keep the kid. She didn't keep the kid!
Well, I better check out this Fast Times at Ridgemont High business, man, and you better check out Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey.
Thank you very much.
I remember seeing Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey at Chadston when it came out, probably in around 91 or something, and I distinctly remember people walking out saying, wasn't as good as Excellent Adventure. You know, real connoisseurs of your stoner comedy.
It was up there, it had its own highlights. It had the fathers in it, which was good.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Hello. Oh, sorry, I didn't mean to cut off quite so hard there. Hello. Have you got our final Heaven and Hell?
G'day, guys. How are you?
Who are you, sir?
I'm Daniel.
Hello, Daniel. Again, another Daniel. What have you got?
Can I just go into the TV shows for a bit?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, there's a recent episode of South Park where with all the recent celebrities that have died, they're waiting in purgatory, waiting for Michael Jackson to sort of accept his death.
Right.
And they're all waiting on a tarmac at an airport, and basically there's an air hostess just going, we'll be 5 more minutes before we can take off, and they're all getting really peeved and, oh, we need to go to the toilet. When can we take off? Yeah.
It's great. And, of course, the South Park movie had a pretty good depiction of hell, didn't it?
Saddam Hussein is the right-hand man.
Yeah, and it's got Gandhi and Adolf Hitler and a whole bunch of celebrities are in hell.
Gandhi.
Thank you very much, Daniel.
Thanks, Daniel.
We're finally going to exhaust our callers. This is it, our final caller. No, we've already exhausted them.
He's had enough. He was offended by the reference to Gandhi being in hell. What music have you got for us, Tony?
I was on Spoke last week, and Michelle Bennett, in fact, I think Delilah provided the factoid that Killing in the Name Of, there was a project going on by a disc jockey in the UK to make sure that an X Factor or a UK's Got Talent contestant did not have the number one downloaded song over Christmas, despite all the marketing clout behind those people.
And what was the plan?
To get Killing in the Name Of by Rage Against the Machine up as the number one downloaded song over Christmas.
And was this successful?
Yeah, it won. It won. And I, being the day late, dollar short individual that I am, actually just bought it 13 or 14 or 15 years too late.
Good on you.
Of my own accord without knowing of the project going on.
So this is classic rock on Triple R.
Yeah. Killing in the Name Of by Rage Against the Machine. You're on ABC Classic FM.
Beautiful.
No, you're on 3RRR with the Two Tones.
Yes.
Tony Wilson and Tony Martin filling in for Elizabeth McCarthy and Dave Graney. And I did say on Spoke last week that is pretty much the best gig I ever saw from the balcony at Festering Hole. Just watched a whole lot of guys with their shirts off.
Oh, right.
Glisten and jump and rub up against each other.
It was just last year.
Yeah. And it was an odd night because I went to the gig by myself.
Oh, yeah.
And
that's like, sad.
There is a certain, you know, some people see movies by themselves, but going to gigs by yourself is possibly a little bit more isolating.
Right.
But I ran into Angus Sampson, and when he saw that I'd come to a gig by myself, he demanded that I remove my shirt and pogo to Rage Against the Machine, just because on a night where you go out by yourself, you don't expect to have your shirt off.
No. See, I've never taken my shirt off at a gig. I did take my watch off once at a Devo gig. That was pretty wild.
Well, did you take your watch in case you hit someone with it? Was it a precautionary thing, like in underage football?
I was just going nuts. You never know. I wear a digital watch, by the way. You may have noticed. People like to mock me for my $39 Casio.
Does it have a light?
Chronograph, yeah, with the light. I've been wearing the same watch for 30 years. Now, just waiting for the digital to come back into fashion. I think it has. I think, along with many other things from the 80s.
When was it the window that it came back in? Because it's nice to drift through that and to pursue a second period of unpopularity.
It's like the blue moon. I think we've missed it. But it's, they still make it. They still make the Casio chronograph. Cheap as, very reliable. Look, if you're listening and wondering where Dave and Elizabeth are, Banana Lounge Broadcasting has been folded up for 3 weeks, Two Tones filling in. But if you were listening last week, you may have heard a very foul-mouthed, and I thought rather impolite, Gary Sizzle, the group program director for Rock FM.
Called me the poor man saffron.
He did. He called me a bitter crank. Called up during the show and gave Dave Graney a mouthful. I think we've got someone on the line now. Who is there? Hello?
Hello, it's Dave Sizzle here.
Oh, Dave Sizzle.
Sydney.
Right.
Yes.
Any relation, Dave?
Well, after last week's show, I was destroyed by Gary Sizzle and followed what I thought was the sound of his voice all the way to Sydney, because I presumed someone of his importance must live here. And, you know, everything's sort of fucked up and nobody seems to know him up here.
Really?
And I've got my head shaved and I'm wearing orange robes and dodging planes flying overhead, yeah.
And so, Dave, in the Sizzle family, would you say you're the more low-key one?
I don't know if I'm in the family anymore. And, you know, Gary's let me down, you know. His ideas were so punched, they punched themselves into my brain and, you know, they seemed so powerful, but as soon as I got here to Sydney, they all disappeared and I woke up in a bedroom with a cup of methadone beside me and two hookers leaving the room, yeah.
What about consulting? Surely you could just do some consulting while you're there, Dave.
I think I'm a delicate sort of fellow who can only be held together in the atmosphere of Melbourne, yeah, so I've got to get out of here.
And what advice have you got for us for during this time slot?
Well, while hanging on the phone, I learned that you're playing Rage Against the Machine from an iPod, and you're talking about outmoded digital watches, you know. I think you're bringing the sizzle back up in me.
How many things are there to offend you in that one break alone?
You've re-sizzled me, you know. Perhaps Gary Sizzle is a creation of your own psyche, Tony.
Well, even worse, we played some Beatles earlier.
Oh, dear.
You're never coming back, are you?
And where are you sitting? Which side are you sitting on?
It was Tony demanded I play. What would you recommend we play? We've got still got half an hour to go to redeem ourselves.
Well, I think for Elizabeth, for her presence, bring some Fleetwood Mac or some horrible Guns N' Roses into play.
Really?
I could find some Fleetwood Mac.
You know, nothing I can do about it, but I'm sure Gary would approve of them.
I'm sure he would. Anything that you'd like to mention while we've got you, Dave?
No, Tony. I'm feeling a bit lost and shaken up here. And I did believe in Gary so much, and he's such an elusive character.
Well, if you just find an expensive hotel room,
yeah,
and you can hear the thump of, say, the new Hinder single coming from behind the door, and a lot of men just cracking very bad jokes.
Yes.
That's where he'll be.
Okay, I'm off.
Testing, audience testing some new concept he's working on, no doubt, at enormous cost.
Thanks for that. I'll follow that tip, yes.
All right, Dave, we'll get the show back to you in one piece in 3 weeks' time.
Okay.
Jeez. And let's bring the mood down now with, I mean, is it sunny out there? Oh, we can't see.
I think so.
Let's have some summery music. Let's have, if you're sitting out in a balcony with a pina colada in your hand, as I'm sure most Triple R listeners would be, how about a bit of John Lee Hooker?
That was Merry Christmas from the Ramones.
Yeah.
And someone, I think, said,
hello, they certainly
someone
did.
Someone said on the, was it on the Scrivener's Fancy that I read that they wrote the same song 150 times, but it was a great song? Was that Michael Witherford?
That might have been Michael Witherford. He does write for the Scrivener's Fancy, which is a fine website, a non-profit venture that you can check out on the internet. Tony Wilson contributes to it.
And, in fact, the Scrivener's Fancy has gone Twitter in a big way.
Yes, you can follow my ranting on, if you're on Twitter, just it's Scrivener's Fancy, one word. Lots of links to things. Today, you know, it's just whatever occurs to me, I'll just put a link to it. Like today, The trailer from Zardoz is up there. That was my link of the day.
So what's Zardoz?
Zardoz is a John Borman film made in the early 70s starring Sean Connery in a red nappy. And it's got the one of the most bizarre trailers you've ever... I just love watching it. It's relaxing to me.
He left Bond to do that, didn't he?
I'm not sure if... Maybe, because it would have been just after Diamonds Are Forever, so quite possibly he went, you know, I look great in a tuxedo, but I'd look way better in a red nappy and thigh boots.
And I actually responded to your Zardoz tweet.
Did you?
With my own tweet. I'm on Twitter as well at Tinseltone.
Tinseltone.
Capital T's. And put in my favourite YouTube clip, including Sean Connery, which is his interview with Barbara Walters, where he gives his view on smacking up women.
Yeah, this is in the 80s, obviously.
Yeah, Barbara Walters says, now, you've previously done an interview, Mr. Connery, where you said that it's okay to hit women. Do you stand by that? And yes, I do.
Is that Sean Connery?
I can't do it. Can you do it? He just says,
yes, I do.
He says, sometimes you get to a point where you've exhausted all other things.
Oh, my God.
He says, like, women often like this. They like to have the last word. And then that's okay. You've let them have that. But then they want to say the same thing again.
Yeah, it's endearing.
And then you've got nothing left to do. He doesn't condone hitting with a clenched fist.
No,
you just use an open hand, he says.
Or just with a knife, like Charlie Sheen allegedly got up to. Will you be watching 1.5 Men and a Wife Basher tonight on Channel 9? Have a look at this. Obviously, people have, if they follow Trivial Stories in the tabloid press, will have checked out the Charlie Sheen story. I was fascinated by... I love it when somebody gets into trouble and they have a box in the story with a bullet point list of all their previous transgressions. And they had one of these for Charlie Sheen. And listen to this. I somehow missed this story. In 1990... Sheen accidentally shoots then-girlfriend Kelly Preston with a rifle, sending her to hospital for 2 stitches. There are reports she moved a pair of jeans belonging to Sheen, which had a gun in one of the pockets. They split soon after. That's the couple, not the jeans. But hang on a second. In the first sentence, we're told it's a rifle.
And then, so it's a rifle in my pocket.
In the pocket of his jeans. Now, I know he's got a pretty broad ass, but really an entire rifle? I mean, even if it was a pistol, that's a pretty long bow to draw. Hang on, I was moving a pair of jeans and there was a gun in the pocket and it went off and shot me in the arm. Not very likely, but even less likely.
An entire rifle. I mean, it needs to discharge below the knee in that situation, doesn't it?
Well, who's got a rifle in their pocket?
Well, someone who's very insecure about themselves, because obviously the pistol in your pocket line needs to be extended out to its long barrel version.
It certainly does. Now, I've got a few other things to rant on about, but let's have some more music, because whenever we do this, I like to play... it's track 2, is what you're looking for. I like to play a bit of UMI, but what I like to do is play a B-side, because they always have good... tracks on the B-side of the single, assuming that singles still exist. This is from the B-side of Damage. This is She Don't Need the Morning.
G'day, Australia. This is Ben Elton, and you're listening to the Banana Lounge broadcasts here on Triple R.
Okay. Well, yes, you're listening to Tony Martin and Tony Wilson filling in for the Banana Lounge broadcasters here on Triple R. Just before that, we heard... UMI with She Don't Need the Morning, which is a B-side, bit of a throwaway, good quality one, from the single Damage, which came out a few years ago.
So, you know, I was forced to sit through the ABBA musical film with Meryl Streep recently that's called...
Mamma Mia.
Mamma Mia.
Yeah.
And it made me think, in watching what was seemed to be an interminable flick, that it was still up to 50 times better than the Ben Elton penned musical We Will Rock You.
Did you go and see that?
Yeah, I had a bit of a freebie there.
Oh, gee.
That was, like, at least with the ABBA film, they made an attempt to bash a story around the song so that the lyrics somehow applied to
right.
And it seemed to sort of hang together as a story, you know, about three potential fathers and Meryl Streep's past with them and who's going to end up being the dad of the pretty girl or whatever. But then we will rock you. They just, like, if they were in trouble, they just called someone in the corner. Let's call her Scaramouche and we'll get on with Bohemian Rhapsody.
Oh, God, what a nightmare. And then didn't he do another one with Rod Stewart songs or something?
Did he? I'm not sure. I heard that interview with Dave, and I don't think Ben Elton lives in Melbourne, does he? Can I try and hit this one into the bleachers?
He's okay. He lives in Fremantle, and the R's doesn't go there, so I think you can...
I thought he was really rude, because I love him. I mean, I came in and once stalked him after he was on, on Oral Text here on Triple R, and I knew he was coming into the building, so I came in specially and got all my books signed and been a long-term fan.
Yeah.
And I thought he was really rude to Dave in that interview. Dave was sort of just asking him about war and such happy topics. And Ben Elton was sort of implying that Dave's questions were sort of beneath him or something.
He's a very defensive man, Ben. I've interviewed him. And he comes into the studio assuming that everyone hates him. And in England, I think he could well be right. Everyone does seem to hate
Ben. But he hasn't lived here long enough yet for that to be the situation.
So he comes in very sort of looking around like someone's going to attack him with something. Someone's just going to hit him with a chair. And he's just on the defence. And it's like he thinks every question is a go at him or something.
Yeah.
He's an odd man.
Yeah.
But what was I going to say there?
Were you going to talk about the B-side with UMI? Is that where we were?
No. I think I had my own potentially libelous story about Ben Elton, and I'm just working out whether I can tell it. Years ago, there was a show called The Big Gig on in this country, and we hadn't seen the show that The Big Gig was basically an exact copy of, which was called Friday Live. I think it was Saturday Live, and then it became Friday Live, hosted by Ben Elton in England. And it was identical. Even the set was the same. I don't know if there was a parrot spewing ticker tape into the audience, but Ben Elton was on our radio show in about 1989, and he came in and he said, "Look, I've got to go in on this big gig tonight." So he's gone. You know, he wanted us to go in with him because he didn't know anybody. And I went, "This will be great."
Yeah,
because this is a copy.
Because he hasn't seen it
before. And he doesn't know it's an exact copy. And so I'm going, I want to be there when he sees the set. And it was fantastic. We walked into Studio 31 at Elsternwick, and his legs gave way under himself. He just couldn't walk, and he goes, "I'm allowed to use the F word. Am I?" Dave Rainey did earlier. Yeah. This is what Ben Elton actually said. He goes, "Fucking hell, it's like somebody's burgled my house and set up all my furniture on the other side of the world." He couldn't believe it. And it was just so worth it to be there for him to spot the rip-off. But
you're a great student of the unacknowledged rip-off, aren't you?
You're
in Australia. What have been your favourites over the years?
I'll get into trouble.
The show that I was on, The Late Report, which embarrassingly sometimes people say, "You were on that late show, weren't you?" No, I wasn't.
Well, no, hang on. You were teamed with another show called The Big News.
And we were attempting to copy, I know, because we watched the show in the pre-production period.
The Day Today. Which has never been screened here. Chris Morris's show. I know the titles were very similar.
It's absolutely worth looking up The Day Today on YouTube and looking for the war episode, which is up there in its entirety.
Beautiful. Yeah, fantastic.
So look that one up.
This all started because Mick Malloy used to live with Russell Gilbert, and Russell Gilbert had an enormous collection of vinyl comedy albums, like definitive, almost every comedy album ever. And Gilbo was known as the joke police. Like, he would always know if someone had stolen a line. He'd tell you, "It's off Shandling! It's Shandling!" And he'd know what it was stolen from. So we used to joke, and I think this got onto radio, that we were one day going to hold a comedy Nuremberg, where all of the steals would be, you know, people would be brought to account. And it's sort of just gone on. For like 20 years later, people still say to me, "When are you going to have the Nuremberg? When are you and Gilbo finally going to stage the Nuremberg? Maybe at the comedy festival one year."
It'd be a pretty good television show. It'd be gripping.
It'd be a lot of trouble. We'd have to leave the country. Everyone would hate us. But that can happen.
But what about the biggies that aren't even individuals, where the ABC has lifted a show without...
Well, The Big Gig was just a blatant copy of Friday Live, and Good News Week is a fairly transparent copy of Have I Got News For You? This goes on.
Spicks and Specks?
They've sort of taken it in their own direction, but certainly I remember when Spicks and Specks was being started, I was working at the ABC on an ill-fated comedy pilot with Sean McAuliffe and Gary McCaffrey, and a producer came into the room who nobody liked, who was working on the pilot. Not the actual, he didn't work on the series, he worked on the pilot for Spicks and Specs. And word had gone around town that this was going to be slightly based on Nevermind the Buzzcocks. Now, I should point out it's since gone in its own direction. But at pilot stage, anyway, that was the word. And this producer came into the room and nobody was too pleased to see him. And someone went, "What are you doing here?" And this guy went, "I'm working on a pilot for a new music quiz here at the ABC." And then I said, quite sort of nastily, "Oh, you mean the one that's based on Nevermind the Buzzcocks?" And this producer looks at me and goes, "I resent that." And at that point, we both looked down and he was holding the DVD of Nevermind the Buzzcocks with its distinctive yellow cover. And it was just one of those moments where you look down and then he didn't say it, but you could tell he was thinking, "I'll get me colt." It was a sprung man situation.
You, there's the opposite can work as well, because I thought this year with Ed Cavalier's TV Bird.
Well, that was licensed. They paid for the rights.
That's what I mean. This is the opposite at play, because surely they didn't need to. Can't a clip show where you're playing the bad clips on television each week, can't that just be any old? Why did they have to?
Well, I felt that. I felt that once, to me, it was like, why does it, just make it Ed Cavalier's clip show.
Yeah.
You know, take the trainer wheels of TV Burp off and just do it your own way. But I guess they pay for the rights. My favourite one of those is American Rosso Unplanned, where an enormous amount of money was paid for the format of a show that has no format, was Badil and Skinner Unplanned, which was made in the UK, where they just sit on a couch, take subjects from the audience and just waffle on.
So isn't that... Did they think there was goodwill attached to the unplanned word unplanned?
Yeah, so they paid apparently close to $1 million for the format of a show that really... that only has one kind of feature, which they didn't do, which is Badil and Skinner will take topics from the audience and say it's beekeeping. They'll write beekeeping on a whiteboard, and then status quo, they'll write that on a whiteboard. And then at the end of the show, they combine all of these random topics into a story. And that was the one thing American Rosso decided not to do, the only distinctive feature of the program they'd paid to buy. So that's... that's different, though. That's when someone actually... licenses.
This is
the
where
show.
you don't copy, properly license, and then the show didn't really need to be properly licensed because it's a free for all. Well done me on saying exactly the same thing in one sentence. This is Dallas Crane. We'll be back with our last talk break for the day. There's only been 10 technical errors today, I've counted so far.
Fantastic.
But wait around for the 11th. I think I'm going to forget to stop this one running into the next track.
Okay, you're back.
Well, with the two tones.
Yeah, Dallas Crane. What's that? Is it time to sign off?
No, I told you it'd run into the next song because I always forget to turn off that particular apparatus. Hey, we had a call. Oh, that was Dallas Crane.
Sure,
with,
it was.
Marsan from an album of a few years ago. We had a call from a listener who's worried that when you say that you're filling in for Dave Graney and Elizabeth McCarthy on Banana Lounge Broadcasting, you keep calling her
Elizabeth MacArthur. I'm sorry, Elizabeth. I'll tell you why this is happening, because Elizabeth MacArthur was someone I was in a play with once in Auckland, bizarrely played my mum. I'm not going to say which play, because there'll be trouble if I say which one. Yeah, because it's one that's
referred to in one of the
in
books.
One of the books, and then people, and then there'll be legal problems.
So is Elizabeth MacArthur, is she one of the comic foil characters in any of the stories?
No, she's not in any of the stories, but she was in one of those plays, so I'm sorry.
Can you say which play it is?
No.
In terms of the fictional name you've given it in the book?
No, I've been advised not to do that.
Right.
Because it's weird, because I do have
Is it the one with the gun?
No, it wasn't the one with the gun, although people know which play that is because I get people coming up to me going, "You changed that, didn't you? But the gun through the bookcase, that's da-da-da-da-da. We did that play and the same thing happened where we had two guns and neither of them went off." But I do have to change names of some – like in A Nest of Occasionals, there's a series of amateur play disasters and some of them are real, like Endgame and A Man for All Seasons, obviously.
And the Beckett's Endgame.
Yeah. They're real plays. But I had to, in order to disguise people's identities, I had to make up fake plays So there is no play called Pardon My Spats, as far as I know.
Who would have thought?
I don't think there's a play called Next Stop Mallorca. So I'm sorry, Elizabeth, for getting your name. Oh, that's terrible. After me sitting here bagging other people.
Well, you're a stickler for correct things, pretty much. Hey, I was when you mentioned your plays and the fact that we're going to get onto the topic of sort of unintentional plagiarisms or songs that sound the same or that sort of thing. I talk about unintentional plagiarism. I had a piece in Scrivener's Fancy this year.
Yes.
The Scrivener's Fancy.
.com.
TheScrivenersFancy.com is where you can find it, about a play I was in 1990 called A Man for All Seasons, the Robert Bolt classic, where I played the Archbishop of Canterbury.
Yes.
And I wrote a story where I was laughed at by... I was scarred following that acting appearance because the audience laughed at the size of my mitre. I had a mitre that was probably about 3 feet high, and I myself are 6'4", so I was up around 10 feet, and I walked out on stage. It must have looked like, you know, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar or one of the Harlem Globetrotters was in their midst.
And people burst into laughter.
They started laughing at how tall I was.
And then in my book, I tell how the same thing happened to me playing the Spanish ambassador in Man for All Seasons.
They laughed at you too.
I stepped out on stage wearing black tights, looking like Marty Feldman in Young Frankenstein. I had the world's thinnest legs. I used to wear 3 pairs of trousers on stage because I was so self-conscious about my skinny legs.
Yeah.
But with tights, there was no way of doing
no
that.
Hiding.
And people just burst into laughter.
So we've both been laughed at for physical reasons in A Man for All Seasons, and we'd both independently written the pieces.
Yeah, and when I told you about that, you were worried that people would think
I'd copied your life.
Hang on, it's a true story.
But I've been in the late report, and you were in the better received late show, and then I was in A Man for All Seasons, and my physical defect was slightly less funny than your physical defect.
Well, that's good. I don't know. I mean, we'd have to run a full. We'll do that.
But these are the unintentional plagiarisms that can pop up in life.
Let's have a musical one now. Do we have time?
Yeah. We're going to go out with it, though, so we should say our goodbyes.
I'll save that rubbish for next week. We will be back in this slot next week, filling in for Dave Graney and Elizabeth McCarthy.
Yep, you've got to think anti-communist, not sheep grazier.
Sorry about that, Elizabeth. That's very embarrassing. Yes.
So we're going to sign off. Coming up now is The Good, The Dub and The Global with Sister BB.
Mm-hmm.
But we will be back for the next fortnight on Tuesdays from 10 till 2, filling in on BLB.
That's right, BLB here on the R's. And to take us out, this is a song which I love by LCD Sound System, North American Scum. But to me, whenever I play it to someone, they go, "That's just Pete Shelley's Homo Sapien." You be the judge, and we'll see you next week.